I will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, though.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding, and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. On today's show, we have a special two-parter, and this will be part one of our interview with Tom Terwilliger. We got Tom back on the show again, and joining him on this interview will be Joey Folco, 1979 Teenage Mr. USA winner. So both of these guys are New Yorkers, and they both competed around the same time. So they've got some stories to tell, and it was great reuniting these guys. They haven't seen each other in a while or talked to each other in a while. And they're both really engaging personalities, as you remember, because we've had them on the show before. So we've got a really, really interesting interview with Tom Terwilliger and Joey Folco. And as I said, this will be part one of our interview today, because we will have part two next week. All right. Got some news about Bill Pearl and unfortunately Sean Connery passing away, and got some reviews of last week's podcast. We got some emails from that. But before we get into that, I do want to mention our sponsor, who is Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number, which is 813-922-8939, or you can reach them at their website, flalternativemeds.com. Again, that's flalternativemeds.com. They have offices all over the United States now, but you can work with them in their Tampa office, and they can do it by phone or by website. They can talk to anybody in the continental United States. So tell them that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and they will give you a free consultation. Plus, they will give you 20% off your first order. All right. Yeah, happy birthday to Bill Pearl, who turned 90 years old, if you can believe it, on October 31st. Bill was born on Halloween, and he was born in 1930. So Bill turns 90 years old. He posted on Facebook. He looks very healthy. He said him and his wife, Judy, were going out to dinner. God bless Bill Pearl, one of the greatest bodybuilders of all time and a true gentleman. And just posted on my Facebook page today a video from when I presented Bill with a Lifetime Achievement Bodybuilding Award in 2011, when I was promoting competitions in the Chicago area. And I had a contest called the Natural Mr. North America, and I brought Bill in, and this was in, as I said, 2011. I think it was in August. Bill knew a lot of people in the Chicago area, including Bill Sino and Bob Gaida and Al Yakic, his friend. So he was able to reunite with a lot of those guys. And I think Bill was around 81 that year. So that was great. And it was great having Bill and his wife out. And I was happy to present him with that award. And I was really glad he came out. I was glad I had the experience of doing that. I think even John Baylor came into town that weekend just to see Bill. Everybody's getting older. A lot of our legends are passing away. But Bill Pearl, thank God, is still with us at 90 years old. So I hope he had a great birthday. And I hope he's feeling well. And I hope he's really healthy. We had some bad news also on the same day. Sean Connery passed away, of course, probably the greatest James Bond ever and the first James Bond. Sean Connery was in such classics as Dr. No and From Russia with Love and my favorite, Goldfinger. And he's still considered probably the best James Bond ever, although Daniel Craig, the new James Bond, who is now, I think, on his last movie, his next movie is going to be his last movie. Daniel Craig is also very good, but love Sean Connery as James Bond, and he lived a long life. He was also 90 years old, and tying that in with Bill Pearl, Sean Connery actually competed in the Mr. Universe contest, if you can believe it or not. In 1953, Sean competed in the NABBA Mr. Universe, which was coincidentally won by Bill Pearl. Bill Pearl won the Mr. America, and then he went over to London that year, and he won the Mr. Universe, and Sean Connery was in the contest. He was listed as Tom Connery, and he did not place, but he had an athletic-looking, slightly muscular build for 1953, so it was good to see the greatest James Bond ever was also a bodybuilder and competed in the Mr. Universe. So it's funny how after he passed away, a lot of pictures that I never even saw before of Sean competing or posing came to light on Facebook. So rest in peace, Sean Connery. He lived a very long life. I guess he passed away with his family around him and in his bed in the Bahamas. So good way to go. He lived a long life. And I think his last movie was actually like 2003 or 2004. So he hasn't made a movie in like 17 years. Great actor. And we really enjoyed his work. All right. So I've got some emails here. I do have a couple of new emails on Apple Podcasts. So if you listen to our show on Apple, please go to the Apple Podcast and under Bodybuilding Legends, you can leave a review. And I guess that helps our ratings and stuff. So it helps our visibility. So if you do that, please go there. So I got some new ones here. I haven't checked out the site in a while, but this one was from Canada, and it was posted on August 3rd, and the name under it is Bo21, and he said, "This is my favorite podcast. If you're into bodybuilding and you want to know the history of the golden age of bodybuilding, this is a must listen." And Jose Palacio on August 4th, said, "This is the most informative and, for me, motivating bodybuilding podcast. After 7 years of not training, I ran across this podcast and I decided to listen after seeing the pic on the podcast app. The show reminds me of being a young lifter and buying my issues of Dan Laurie's Muscle Training Illustrated. I love hearing from and about the bodybuilders I used to read about. I listen to this podcast while I train. Thank you, John, for your podcast magazine every week." And we just got a new one here about Dwayne Broadway, which is our show last week. This was also from Australia, and this was just posted on October 30th. "What a formidable individual Dwayne was. I keenly appreciated his Christian principles and perspectives in steering away from synthetic anabolic steroid use, emphasizing his ethical consideration for glorifying God's gifts and endowing him with perfect genetics. Dwayne also steered away from denigrating other bodybuilders regarding their alleged drug use. What a humble and principled man. I really enjoyed listening to Dwayne's anecdotes whilst battling through 21 sets of chest, back, triceps, and abs. Thanks, John, as always, for these highly rewarding podcasts. Thoroughly appreciate how much work and preparation must go into each podcast every week. Sincere regards, Peter Schuler from Australia." All right. Thank you, Peter. All right, and speaking of Dwayne, we did have a few more comments on my Facebook page. Of course, John Defendis, his very first contest against Dwayne, and Dwayne won that contest. John said, "Dwayne Broadway is a great lifetime bodybuilding champion, and I'm so proud to call him my friend. Dwayne is one of the great champions who beat me in my first contest, actually spanked me like a bad child. He was an iron that sharpened my iron and helped me to conquer future goals. I love that guy." And Dwayne responded, "John, you're a great champion and a greater friend. I love you, brother." Tom Terwilliger, who's our guest today, said, "Dwayne, you were and still are a tremendous inspiration. You were someone I didn't want to compete against because you were always in great shape. I don't think you ever went home without a trophy, most of them first place. By the way, is that little Mike saying, 'Hold on a second, I know I wasn't in the show, but isn't that my trophy anyway?'" And Dwayne responded, "Thanks, Tom. Coming from a great champion like you, those words mean a lot. Tom, it did seem as if Mike had quite a grip during the presentation." And they're talking about the picture they posted where someone is handing Dwayne a trophy. And Dwayne says, "God bless you, Tom, and continued blessings, my friend." Rich Fitter said, "One of the nicest guys you'll ever meet and a great ambassador for the sport." My friend Dennis Durkin from Chicago said, "John, wow, I remember this guy from way back in the 70s. Bob Bonham said, "First local contest I ever saw, he won." And John Defendis said, "Yeah, Bob Bonham, that was probably the Suburban when Dwayne beat my smooth ass." And Bob Bonham said, "John Defendis, it was at the Orange YMCA." And he said, "I remember only one woman in attendance." All right. Also on my YouTube channel, I posted Dwayne's video. If you want to check out my YouTube channel, It's under my name, John Hansen, and I'm posting all of our podcasts now on YouTube. So if you want to check it out on YouTube instead of listening to the podcast, you can do that or do both. Ronan said, listened earlier. Great podcast, guys. I love to hear more natural guys, John, and real naturals, not guys that took steroids for 10 years and stopped and now call themselves natural. Jerry said, Dwayne is a New Jersey legend. The first bodybuilding show I ever saw was the 1978 Mr. Suburban in the good old Orange Y. That show gave me the push I needed to start competing myself. Dwayne is one of the best natural bodybuilders ever and a fine judge. Odessa File said, I remember Dwayne when I first started buying the magazines in 1976. Great physique. Borgata said, Dwayne is the perfect example of what a bodybuilder should be. A great physique, not a bloated cartoon character who suffers from poor health or looks like they never touched a weight when they stop. A great physique, a healthy life, and a first-class person. And Samuel said, Tony Pandolfo was a great bodybuilder, managed Future Man Gym in Long Island, influenced many guys. Yeah, we talk about Tony in our upcoming interview in a second with Tom Terwilliger and Joey Folco. Also this week, I posted another of our older interviews with Jerry Branum. This was from December of last year as 2019 was ending. And as you remember, we always go back in time with Jerry at the end of each year, and we reminisce about the years from 30 years ago, 40 years ago, and 50 years ago. So we already had videos up with me and Jerry talking about 1969 and also 1979. So on this one that I posted this week, we talk about 1989. So it was a pretty interesting interview. We talked about the Nationals that year that was won by Troy Zuccolato. We talk about Vince Taylor winning his first pro show, which was the 1989 Night of the Champions. We talk about the first Arnold Classic, which was won by Rich Gaspari in 1989. And we also talk, of course, about the Mr. Olympia, which was Lee Haney's sixth win in 1989 in Rimini, Italy. And Jerry was at that show. So we had a really great discussion with that. So that video is up now on YouTube as well. That was Bodybuilding Legends show number 127. And we got a few comments on that as well. Maritime said, fantastic review of 1989. I love this stuff. I did not realize Troy hit it big like he did. Good for him. Man, I wish you could get Bob Paris on. It would be interesting to hear his views where bodybuilding has gone. I trained with Nasser for a short time and Joe DeAngelis for a season. Both are dead. We lost so many good ones before the age of 50. The channels don't really talk about it because they cater to the younger generation and they don't want to scare them, is my guess. Anyway, I love this episode. The Spritz said, awesome. I always love when Jerry's on the show. This comment said, Jerry is the man. Absolutely love him and the show. Please do more podcasts. Zen Bodybuilder said, I'm one of the few bodybuilders that was inside an actual mercury capsule, Alan Shepard's, circa early 1960s. Robert said, great video. Thanks, John. I went to the first and many Arnold Classics doing the VIP packages. Those were the days. You and Jerry named all the reasons why I lost interest in bodybuilding today. Chris said, as always, thanks, sir. All the best to you and yours. Meek Rodriguez said, great job. Zen Bodybuilder said, Mike Katz did get a shot at the 1974 universe. Now the contests are held at hotels and everyone's wearing funny little masks. Jason Stewart said, there's a famous story where random strangers told Arnold, ooh, I would never want to look like you. And Arnold replied, don't worry, you never will. John doesn't understand that Arnold was extreme for his time. The average person wants to look like Ryan Reynolds, Wesley Snipes, Tom Cruise. They don't want to look like any pro bodybuilders from any era. It took a lot of brainwashing and looking at muscle magazines, searching for information on how to get cut for those guys to look normal or even appealing to me. All right. So thank you guys for your comments. I appreciate that. And if you want to send me an email personally, you can do it at naturalolympia@gmail.com. If you have any comments about the show, or if you have any guests you want to hear from, or you have any comments about the shows we already did, just send that to me at naturalolympia@gmail.com. All right, so that is it. And we are now in the month of November, if you can believe it. November 1st is today. I've got a busy month this month because I got my surgery coming up on the 18th. So I'm ready to get that over with as far as that's my hernia surgery. That I actually had done last year and it didn't work. So this time they're going to go in and try and put a mesh in there. So hopefully this will hold. It's nothing life-threatening or anything. It's just a small hernia in between my upper abs that I've actually had for a few years. So I'm just trying to get it fixed now because I work at a hospital and I've got really good health insurance. So I want to get it fixed while I have that. So that is going to be on the 18th and I'm going to have to take some time off the gym. So I'm just really training hard and I'm actually dieting pretty good now. If I could stay away from my favorite cookies, but getting a little leaner and I'm going to try and lose another half inch before I get to the surgery. So I'm in good lean condition when they do the surgery because I'm going to have to take at least 4 to 6 weeks off of no training at all so they can let this mesh heal before I go back to the gym. So it's going to be a long layoff. But I did the same thing last year and it went by pretty quick. So we'll see what happens. But I'm ready to get that over with and getting in good shape now. I'm getting lean and I'm training really hard because I know I'm going to have a little bit of a break. But I'll be able to hopefully work on some more podcasts and maybe get some books done. I'm trying to work on some ebooks for my other website, which is johnhansonfitness.com, where we've got the fitness challenge going on. And I've got a lot of programs on there. If anybody's interested in getting in shape, check that out. I've got fat loss programs. I've got 12-week transformation programs. I've got a natural bodybuilding size program if you guys are natural and you want to learn how to get bigger. And I've got a program specifically for over 50 men. If you want to get in shape, in the best shape of your life, and you're over 50 and you don't think you can do it, I've got a program on there specifically for that. And a lot of these guys who are working with me now on our latest fitness challenge, which is our fall fitness challenge that we are about 5 weeks into now, that'll end on December 21st, right before the holidays. They are making some phenomenal progress. I mentioned one guy last week, Mario, who already lost like 5 inches off his waist in the first month. Just crazy. So some of these guys are really doing fantastic and they're all sticking with it. I'm sending them new programs each week. That's what I do when I write up programs for you guys. I'll send you new workout programs each week so you'll know exactly what to do. You won't have to figure it out yourself. So in addition to the training and diet program, I follow up with these guys each week and I do that on all my programs. So check that out at johnhansonfitness.com under programs and you can see what I offer. All right, so that is all I got for my opening. Here is part one of our interview with Mr. Tom Terwilliger, who was the 1986 light heavyweight champion at the MPC Nationals before he went on and became an IFBB pro bodybuilder. And he is reunited with his old friend, Joey Folco, who won the 1979 Teenage Mr. USA. And they were both in the New York area. They both trained with Steve Mihalek at Mihalik's gym, and they got some great stories. So we're going to talk some old school bodybuilding with Tom Terwilliger and Joey Folco. Here we go. All right, welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and I have two old school special guests with me today. First, we've got Mr. Tom Terwilliger, who was the 1986 MPC Nationals light heavyweight champion and then became a pro bodybuilder. Welcome to the show again, Tom.
Thank you, buddy. Good to be here.
And then we got one of my favorite guests from the last few years, Joey Folco. Joey was the 1978 Teenage Mr. USA winner.
79.
79, I'm sorry.
79.
And Joey had some great stories about the old days. So I thought I'd bring you guys back together so we could talk some old school bodybuilding again.
Thank you for having me, guys. Two legends yourselves, and I love you guys. Wow, man, I'm excited to hear some stories myself.
You know, John, you said that. We'll start with some old stories. Unfortunately, all we've got are old stories at this point.
That's right. Those are the best stories, Tom.
Actually, it is interesting because, you know, Joe, I've been, you know, following, you know, what you're doing. And I tell you what, it was fascinating. If there's really, I mean, there's several things, obviously, that we can appreciate about social media. And that's certainly, you know, for me personally, it's connecting with someone like John Hansen, who's doing a great podcast, serving so many people, sharing some of the old school technology and some of the athletes from back in the day and really kind of sharing what bodybuilding was at one time, at the very least, but also reconnecting and connecting with old friends like Joey. I mean, when I saw that Joey Folco was on Facebook, and I think I got wind of it, I think I got the connection through John Defendez or something. I can't remember. Maybe it was Jerry Scalise. And I was like, oh, I got to go check out Joey Folco's page. And then I'm like, holy crap. He's like this incredible musician. So I didn't even know about any of this stuff. And your daughter, I mean, it is so cool to be able to recognize and to see someone who's come from the same kind of roots in many respects that I come from and has just sort of like gone in a different direction and accomplished some incredible stuff. So, I mean, you know, it's a great honor to be on with you, Joey, in many respects.
And you're, and look, man, equally said about you, because you're a legend, man. You're in a lot of ways. When I was training at Mihalik's gym, your name would pop up frequently. And I know, didn't you have an older brother?
I had an older brother, but Raymond wouldn't have been. Raymond was really my older brother who got me into bodybuilding.
Wasn't
but it was my twin brother who was, yeah.
And we heard those stories, and this guy doesn't know Tom Twilliger, and the guy's amazing. And so photos would surface, and you got to remember, this is before social media.
Right.
So it wasn't like you could pick up your phone and go on and go, let me see this guy, you know. And then we saw you, and I was like, oh my God, like, he's freaky looking, this kid. Like, and we were all kids, but like, oh, how old is he? What division is he in? Because you always had to compare yourself by proxy, because you had to, you know, like, I had pictures on my wall of the greats. You know, that's who I would manifest my concept of how I had to get it. It's good, as you know, Arnold and Lou and Cal Skalzak and all these guys. And I saw pictures of you, I'm like, oh my God, not another guy who's great. Now I hope I don't have to compete against him, because you know you want to win, right? So you've always been one of those guys, like a Long Island champion, man. So I'm really like.
Well, I appreciate it, because you know the stories overflowed into. I was training really, and it was almost like they were sort of competing gyms in many respects, because there were all when I first walked into Future Man Gym.
Oh,
I mean, it was just like legends in there, man. In fact, the very first time I walked into Future Man Gym as a 14 or 15-year-old, and I had just barely started lifting weights, and someone had told me about this gym that was just 5 miles from my home in Amityville. I was living in Massapequa. And so I rode my bike, and they said, don't go there, man. These guys will eat you up and spit you out. You don't even want to walk in this place, right? And I'm like, I got to check it out, man. I got to, because I was reading Muscle and Fitness and looking at the legends out in, you know, California and Venice Beach. And they were like, this is the Venice Beach of New York, you know? And first off, it took, I don't know how much, I mean, it was just like, I had to suck up every ounce of fear and just kind of turn it into motivation just to walk through the door. Because I remember standing outside the glass, I mean, hearing the grunts and the groan and the screaming and the hollering and the weights dropping and I couldn't see in because it was all steamed up. You know what I mean? It was Long Island in the middle of winter and all the windows were steamed up. And I'll never forget, I walked in and first off, I was overwhelmed. And Joey, you can relate to this because this is the old school, and you too, John, the old school bodybuilding gyms. The odor, the fragrance, it was just like, it was a combination of sweat, vomit, and Bengay. I mean, everybody used freaking Bengay, and everybody threw up. I mean, it was like, boom, it hit me like a ton of bricks, man, walking through that door. I was like, oh my God. And then the next thing I see is Steve Mihalik. I didn't know who the guy was. You know, Mr. Universe, Mr. America, and I was just like, and he's over there. You remember how Steve
was Tony Pandolfo at that point.
Tony Pandolfo was, I think he was the owner or the manager at that point.
Okay.
And so Tony was in there, John Girolamo, a whole bunch of other guys with massive arms and legs and stuff. But it was Steve Mihalik, and Steve was being photographed by Bob Gruskin at the time. As I'm walking in, and he's like working out, he's doing the real workout. He's not just doing a photo shoot, but a BS photo shoot, you know? And of course, you know, you had the ripped up old, I don't know, politically incorrect, but the guinea tank tops, you know, the old wife beaters. Right, there you go. But it was a white one, but you would never know it was white. I mean, it was just like yellow and gray and had everything, and it had rips and tears and holes all in it. And the belt cinched like Sinbad. I mean, it was just like, and he's squatting like 600 pounds. I was like, oh my God. I'm like this 14-year-old kid. I was like, holy shit, is it possible for a human being to look like this? So Future Man, this was, I think, before Steve opened Mr. America's.
Oh, wow.
And so when Steve did, they become not necessarily, it was interesting, and you might have a different perspective on this, Joey, is that they didn't necessarily become rivals, but it was just like Farmingdale, Amityville, they were spread far enough from each other, and they were great champions and great bodybuilders, and of course they were led by legends, Steve Mihalik and Tony Pandolfo. So I was over on this end of the woods, although I visited Mihalik's gyms, Mr. America's. You were training over at the other end of the woods, man. So the room, so the back and forth stories and stuff were always flowing.
You're right. And, you know, it's funny you mentioned that because you talk about rivalry, and I never perceived it that way as much as it was a humbling experience for guys because we were very inquisitive back in the day. And I remember saying, oh, who is that guy? What gym is that? Oh, I know that gym. Like, I was so smitten with the sport and that, like, same thing with me when I came across Mihalik. I kept coming in. He kept throwing me out of the gym because I wanted to be a teenage champion. Yeah. To me, there was some cachet about that. That it never was Mr. America or Mr. Universe. It was always wanting to be this teenage bodybuilder. Because when I joined, it was October 14th, 1976 on my birthday. Because my mother would not sign me up. Because she had this theory that your bones are too young and you're still growing. Yeah. And I read you. And I don't, you know, she had an encyclopedia. And I was like, okay, so my birthday came, and that day she joined, she signed me up, and I kept coming in the morning. Mihalik trained early. He kept throwing me out. Matter of fact, I have it on video, that whole thing, because we did an interview on ABC or CBS after I won the show. And long story, I joined, and we got to be, you know, he trained me for a minute. But you're right. I remember hearing Tony Pandolfo's gym, and there was also gyms on Eastern Long Island, Mr. Olympia gym, and I always perceived it as wanting to learn because I was such a sponge for wanting to figure out how. Yeah. How do you become great? Like, I didn't have that I'm better than anybody persona. I didn't know. That wasn't interesting to me because I've always learned, man, knowledge is power, and if you could figure it out from guys who were better, and everybody was better because I was a kid who walked in 150 pounds, 160 pounds, whatever I was. And I just wanted to grow. So like you, you're right. It wasn't competitive. It was by that other side of the track.
Definitely the other side of the track. So John, you started as a teenager, didn't you?
Yeah, I started 14. I trained at home for a couple of years. And then I think I was 16. I had to wait for my driver's license. I had to get my driver's license first before I could go to the gym. Yeah.
I had a bicycle.
Same here. I rode my bike to Amityville. Freezing that first day. It was February, for crying out loud. Jeez, and then Long Island is cold, man.
Yeah. So, Tommy, let me ask you a question because I'm from North Massapequa. Are you from the park?
I'm Massapequa Park. Yeah, I went to Burner High School. Did you go to Massapequa?
No, I went to Plain Edge High School. Now, I know you had Burner and you had Massapequa High, and so that was obviously made sense off Merrick Road for you to go all the way east a couple of miles and then there was a gym on the left side.
That's exactly what it was. Right there in Amityville, it was a nightclub. I was brawling in that nightclub all the time, right on the corner from Future Man. But, it was probably about, I guess, somewhere between 3 and 5 miles on a Schwinn Stingray. I mean, it took forever, but it was well worth it, man. It was well worth it.
And that's why I went to Mihalik. It was the opposite way. I lived in North Massapequa. North. So it was two roads. I made a right and went straight for 3 miles, and I wound up at used to be called Mr. America's Body Shop. That was the name of the actual gym.
Yeah.
It wasn't Steve Alex. It was Mr. America's Body Shop. That was the name. And it just opened either 75 or 76 because we had heard about it and just so happened I was going to be 16. That's when I joined.
Yeah.
You had to be 16 in order to join the gym back then, huh?
Yeah.
We all lied. I was 14 as well. I think maybe 15. Maybe.
Yeah.
You know? In fact, I do remember Mihalik's, though, Mr. America's gym later on, because I'd already been training a year or two or so. And Bob, I think it was Bob Gruskin. You remember Bob Gruskin at all?
I remember him very well. I went to Bob's home once with, I think it was John or somebody, but it's funny. All of those guys, I'm sure you did, were under the tutelage of Bob Gruskin. Bob helped me with a few things, but you know what? I got to tell you, man, I always just did it myself. I never had a coach per se, and I wish I did. I think I would have benefited more. I kind of stayed in this box, and I think there's a couple of reasons why, and I didn't know I was going to be competing. And when I did, it happened theoretically quick. I mean, I joined in 76. My first show was in 78. So it was a quick time. And you got to remember, I joined in October. So there we are in 77. I'm competing in 70, and I just kind of learned it on myself. I would read a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
And I never really – all those guys had Bob, and I never felt like I had that connection with him. And there was no other reason than it just never happened that way. There was no really bad reason why. It just
– Right. Yeah, because he tutelaged a lot of young athletes, a lot of teenagers, you know?
Right.
Myself, John DeFendis, Gary Scalise, Rich Politano, I mean, even Matt Mendenhall, some guys. And just for, you know, for our listeners that don't know, we had, in fact, John, you were so gracious to do a tribute to the late Bob Gruskin several months ago when he passed away. Right. Bob was a professor at New York University, I believe it was, or Brooklyn University. And just like the humblest, like, professor-looking guy, the glasses, the little Jewish guy with the pocket protector. And he just had
a great guy.
Tremendous interest in bodybuilding. Yeah. He was a great photographer. He contributed a lot of stuff to the magazine. Just a really great guy and just a wealth of knowledge and wisdom. I didn't even know where he got all this knowledge and wisdom from. I mean, this the stuff that he would teach and share wasn't stuff he had learned, you know, becoming a professor. This was stuff that was like, you learned it in the street. You learned it in the trenches. You learned, I mean, just like when he taught me how to do a concentration curl, I was like, there's no professor in the world at Harvard that knows how to do a concentration curl like this. And it made all the difference in the world. So it definitely did. And I was the same way. I even resisted a little bit. You know what I mean? It was just like, I kind of didn't want that kind of coaching. I just wanted to do it on my own. I was like, you, John, I bet you were too. We had stacks, right? Remember the stacks of magazines?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, Muscle and Fitness, Iron Man, the old Iron Man when it was a little smaller print, you know?
Right.
Stacked. I had like 3 or 4 stacks in my bedroom of those magazines. And that's what we just, you know, inundated ourselves with that information. Yeah. Of course, a lot of it was misinformation, but you learn the hard way. You figured it out, right?
Yeah, Tom, Joey and I were just talking before you came on, and we were talking about how things are so different now with social media. And everybody learns everything. But you're right. I mean, back then, we only had the magazines. And then the other guys we would talk to at the gym. And that's it was like passed on. The information was passed on.
Yeah.
There was no social media. There was no real coaches. I mean, you had guys like Bob Gruskin. But most of the time, I think everybody just kind of did it on their own, right?
Agreed. I think that's right. Hey, did you guys make the same kind of mistakes I did that first year or so? Which is, I remember distinctly being in Future Man. And being there for like 3.5-4 freaking hours until Tony Badalfo came up to me and he says, what the hell are you doing, man? I'm like, I'm training. I've read some work, you know, oh, I got to do my forearms. I got to get the calves in. I got to get da da da. And I'm spending like an hour on every body part. And he's like, this is not going to grow like that, kid. And he finally like instilled a little bit of wisdom, like, let's get this shit done in an hour and a half tops.
Yeah.
You know, before that, it was 3.5-4 hours in the gym. It was ridiculous, man.
Yeah.
Steve Mihalik, it's funny because you're right. And I went in the first time, I think it was the first few weeks, and I was clueless. I was just doing everything that I got from the Bob Hoffman School of Bodybuilding. It's like, how many liver pills should I take?
Oh my God, Bob Hoffman was huge on the desiccated liver, right?
Yeah. Liver pills. I bought them, and it was the back of a magazine. And I remember reading of the kid who got sand kicked in his face and x-ray vision glasses, and you could see the girl's shirt and your hands. And this Bob Hoffman vitamins. I'm like, oh, I take that. I can look like this guy, you know. And I went in and I haphazard, you know. But I think anything I was doing was kind of working because my body was starving for the blood and the thing. And then when Mihalik finally was like, you know, what are you doing? And when the insanity crept in, which was all those ridiculous amount of sets, who knew? So you did it. I'm a sponge. I'm going to listen to – and he's, like you said earlier – he had the belt and the top and the shoulders and, you know, he's wearing those prison sneakers. And and you're looking at – that's like another world. And I'm like, okay, he must know. He's the world champion, right, or the whatever.
Yeah.
And that's when it started making sense to me. But I'm still not sure about the 72 sets, whatever it might have been. But it's what it was.
Yeah, you know, I love the guy. He's one of my dearest friends still today, John DeFendis. And he seems to be like one of the only guys that actually survived training with Mihalik for any length of time. Yeah. I mean, Mihalik's whole goal was just like, and I remember, you know, later on in my career as well, it was just like, I would train with these young guys and it didn't matter if I burned them out in 3 months, one competition, they were gone anyway. You know what I mean? Because they couldn't do what I was doing because we were conditioned to it. We were, you know, knew what we were doing. We knew how to recover. We were maximizing recovery. And they weren't for the most part. But I remember Mihalik used to just like burn through guys, man. Yeah. You know, I mean, he would train with guys in just like six. I don't know how anyone could last 3 months with Mihalik.
Well, all those steps. I stayed with him for a while. I kept my my tenacity was right there. I kept every step of the way. It was brutal. And I think Steve was such a special guy. And I think a lot of it was neuroses. And what I mean by that is, I'm serious. I think if he didn't do, let's make believe he said 72 sets. If he fell short, I really believe it was like a failure for him in his mind, only because he came up with that number. And I think after a while, you know, when you're doing 10, you say, I got to do 10 the next time. Look, you can't do 10 sets and the next day come back and say, I have to do 8. Because then it's like, what was the sense of the 10? So it grew from there. So when we would do legs and do arms and do shoulders, and he would say 50 sets, 60 sets. Oh, I was like, oh my God. It was just brutal. And I'm asking other guys, well, what do you do? And on a hint, you know, thing on the side, they're like,
yeah,
20 sets or 12 sets.
12 sets.
Which is still a lot, right? I mean,
yeah.
And 72, and we did it. John kept up with him every step of the way. I was right behind him, man. I was younger by 2 years.
Yeah.
But I did what I had to do, man. And eventually I won and went on, but.
Yeah. No, John speaks very highly of you, man. You were one of the tenacious champions over in that gym. And you know, and John, maybe you can relate to this as well, but I totally resonated with what you were saying earlier about I wanted to be a teenage champion. There was some cachet with that. There really was with being a teenage champion, winning some title. And I remember for me, in many respects, bodybuilding at that time as a teenager was my redemption in many respects. I was a kid who was always in trouble. I had some really negative ideas about myself. My self-esteem was low. I had all this stuff going on from having been put into special ed class and left back a year.
Me too.
Dyslexia, hyperactivity, all this other crap.
I can't believe you just said that.
Did you experience something similar?
You just described me.
Yeah.
Put back in first grade. I couldn't focus. I was awful in school because I couldn't get – I won't interrupt you, but go ahead.
No, totally. And it's what's really fascinating about that, Joey and John, is that I've come to learn, you know, certainly not just recently, but over the years, you know, at that time, we have this idea that we're isolated. We're the only one. We're going through this thing alone when we're left back or we're put in a special ed. Whatever the situation might be, it's almost like you feel isolated from everyone else. And you're the only one experiencing it. I've come to find out, I mean, look at you. You are a brilliant musician. You are a great champion bodybuilder. You're an incredible dad. And you went through those same things. I've come to learn that many of the people that didn't fit, that were the square pegs, that didn't fit in the round hole or vice versa,
right,
have a sense of genius. We don't conform to the learning style that was being forced on us in many respects. And I've come to learn that more people than I can possibly have imagined have gone through similar experiences and later on come through the other end as successes in some area of their life. And so for me at that time, bodybuilding was my redemption in many respects. And so, you know, and I even resisted coaching because to me it was like the idea of being taught. I don't want to be taught. I'm sick of being taught. You know, I'm sick of being told what to do. Fortunately, I found some great, I mean, Tony Padolfo and Bob Gruskin, we talked about, definitely made a difference, man.
You know, you just mentioned everything you said resonates probably too close to home for me. I was the kid who was put back, didn't have the confidence. I had my dad, who I loved to death. We had such a tumultuous relationship back and forth because he was a hardcore New York Italian guy, and you didn't screw up in my house. So when you did, you knew about it.
Wow.
And I guess now looking at it, you want that acceptance. You want that thing. There was fear. And my dad was an abused child. So I understood later in life why he did the things that he did and how. Because his teaching skills came from a way of force and fear because that's all he knew.
Yeah.
And I understand a lot of it. So being in the gym gave me the freedom to express myself. And I said, I'm going to teach myself. I don't need anybody to do it. I think you're right. You hit it on the head. And here's another thing. I taught myself guitar and piano and drums and how to be a studio engineer, how to produce and how to sing and how to write and compose. And I never had lessons. And that I think that was because I didn't have the focus to say you could sit in a class. Matter of fact, to this day, Tom, I still get nervous when I have to take a test. I still get jittery.
Yeah.
I'm not confident in it. I just don't work that way.
Right.
So I had to find my inner genius to say how, without justifying a flaw in my personality who I am as an individual. And I come to realize and come to grips with, this is how I learn. This is how I do what I do. And bodybuilding taught me that. So what you just said kind of reinforces that thinking. And I must admit, you know, maybe they say misery loves company, but I got to tell you, man, that what you just said, I've never heard anybody else speak those words so clear and so true. So that's, wow, I got to be honest. That was awesome.
Thank you. I appreciate it. That was the experience. I mean, John, I'm betting you had even a similar experience. I don't know anyone who's been a great champion bodybuilder that was like, and listen, that's bravo if you were. Straight A student, never in trouble, didn't have any kind of learning challenges, or didn't have some kind of home issues. It's almost like there's no motivation there to do what needs to be done to be a great champion in bodybuilding or anything else. Yeah. The motivation just isn't quite there to make it happen. So I think a lot of us have had that experience.
Yeah, I always heard that a lot of bodybuilders, a lot of champion bodybuilders had sort of a tempestuous relationship with their fathers. And they're doing the bodybuilding as a way to prove to their fathers that this is, that they're a man and that they're going to be successful at this.
Interesting.
You guys want to hear something that's funny, John? You said that when I went, I was in Santa Monica. The show that I won was, you know, 79. I won a few shows, but the one that I'm not say most proud of. I'm proud of all of my accomplishments, but the 79 Teenage USA, because I lost the year before in 78. So I came back the next year and won it. That was a really important goal.
It's huge.
It taught me a lot. Yeah, and that was huge. And there's so much about that I'll like to tell later on. But nonetheless, so I'm in Santa Monica. My dad gave me some money. He said, well, if you're not going to college and you want to win the show, he handed me some money. He sent me to California. I lived in Santa Monica at the Dundee Motel for a month.
Love it.
A week before the show, or 3 days before the show, whatever it is, he came out with my brother and two friends, and he takes me to the big counter at Gold's Gym. And we're standing at, you know, had the big counter back in the day.
Yes.
And it's my dad and I. And, you know, my dad walks in. He's like, what do you want? You need a sweatsuit? What do you need? A sweatsuit? What do you need? A tank top? What do you need? You know, this. I said, well, yeah, I said I could use one, but that's all right. He goes, no. All right. You like the black one? He bought me a black sweatsuit with the gold.
Oh, they were awesome.
Yellow. Awesome, right?
Yeah.
I mean, awesome. And I'll never forget, bro, I'm telling you, I go, there's this big burl guy, I think Ken Kuhn, and these big guys at the counter, and I bent over and I kissed my father on the cheek.
Wow.
And I said, thank you. And he just looked at me and was like, oh, it's okay, it's okay. Like, he was all embarrassed. And that was a move that was so, like, I had to do it. I was so grateful, and I felt like, fuck these guys. This is my dad.
Yeah.
And I'm so proud to this day that I do that. And it's funny. I tell that story to my kids. I said, you know what? Don't ever be afraid to kiss your father, man. Because someday I'm not going to be around. Mm. And my dad is no longer with us. And I remember doing that. And that was so special to me. Because he knew he wanted me to look like a champion. He wanted me to have everything in place. He knew how hard I worked. And it was a long road to get to where I was that year in 79. And then we flew from Santa Monica to San Jose, where the show was, and hence that's the story.
Well, that's a great story. And John, I remember the first time going to Gold's Gym. It was later on. I never got to California to Gold's Gym until after winning the light heavyweight national championship.
Oh, really?
But oh dear God! Like I wanted the tank top and those warm up suits, man.
Yeah.
Like the Adidas style with the double striped. They were kind of nylon, and the pants were tight, and they were like the badass. You had one of those things, you had made it, man. You were in, you know what I mean?
You're right, and that's exactly, this is the double stride. It was tight at the bottom, the zipper on the bottom.
The zipper on the bottom.
Yeah.
And you had to have it, and I got to tell you, man, I couldn't believe he bought me two of them.
Yeah, Gold's Gym logo.
Oh, yeah, with the whole thing.
Yeah. But I didn't want to take away from that experience with your dad, because that's so meaningful. Connection and part of the issue is for so many men, it's just like perhaps that still struggle with those issues with their dads, and if they're gone, is never having had that experience, that one thing that sort of brought them together for the moment, a common cause, you know.
Yes.
And I was fortunate to have that with my dad as well. In fact, he was so supportive. My dad was one of these interesting guys. He was more of an intellect than anything else. And he worked for the telephone companies. He didn't have a big high paying. He wasn't a doctor. He wasn't a lawyer. But he was very smart. He's extremely intelligent. Could do anything and fix anything. but he was incredibly supportive. That's one of the things that I had going for me, my twin brother and I. I mean, when we wanted to get into motocross, we got into motocross. We managed to get some bikes. They needed work. He helped us rebuild them and do the whole thing. We got on a motocross track. And my dad never really had an interest in it. He would literally put the lawn chair out of the motocross track, sit back with his, you know, like he looked like a Bob Gruskin kind of, you know, the short sleeve nylon shirt, pocket protector. And he would just read his newspaper while we did our motocross stuff. You know what I mean? And it was like anything, every time we wanted to get into something, that was where he was there. He was supporting. He wasn't particularly into it. He wasn't into bodybuilding, but he supported it all the way. So I was very fortunate to have had that experience with my dad. And I would encourage anyone to kind of like reconcile, to get closer. Because like you said, they're not going to be around forever if they're not now, you know?
No, it's a flicker of time, and you're right. And men in general have that wall, maybe not all, but some have that wall and they can't cross that line of affection with a dad. And maybe because, and look, old school dads, I think are a little bit different than today's dads.
I have
a very great relationship with my children, hugging and kissing. And my 15-year-old Tyler's coming over. Oh, daddy, you got a hug? And I kiss him. What are you doing, buddy? Where are you going today? He wanted to buy a car. We just got him into a 1952 Plymouth that he's restoring.
Wow.
He's like a virtuoso musician. And I said, you need to get other interests in life. And he got this car, and we're doing it together. And my dad, as supportive as he was in so many ways, had an old school thinking. You're going to get grease on the driveway, be careful. But I think, and I'm just like, if you get grease on the driveway, clean it up. You know, but you learn from this thing.
You're
supposed to be better than what you had, right? Isn't that the thing? You always try to grow and escalate to another place.
Hey, Joey, you said you were out in, you went out to California for a whole month before that 79 USA?
Yes. So my dad gave me, believe it or not, it was $5,000. And what happened was he had all my other siblings he sent to college. And he knew the writing was on the wall that I wasn't that scholastic guy. And I wasn't going to do that. I was into bodybuilding. And I had just started music when I was younger, but I never had, wasn't showing signs of being professional at it. But nonetheless, he sent me to, and Mihalik was supposed to go on that trip. And with all due respect to Steve, he jacked me out the last week. And my dad was like, he's not going with you? Because the plan was Steve and I to go to the Dawn D Motel, where he had stayed before when he was out there years before. I bought the plane ticket. We were ready to go. I bought this big trunk. Remember those trunks with the latches and in there?
Oh, yeah.
Crap and vitamins and just stuff, you know? And I stayed there for a month. I think I went in July, the end of June or July, and I stayed there until the show, which was on August 11th, 1979.
Oh.
And I would take the bus. Yeah, I trained at Gold's Gym.
Gold's, okay.
And I didn't do Worlds. I did Gold's Gym. And I would go every day. It was 6 days a week by myself. And I figured it out. That was really the first time, you know, I was 18. It was the first time I had been away from home and on my own. Because I had been on the, you know, the Steve Mihalik's gym and all those guys and training in Long Island. A few times I went to, you know, the Venice Muscle Beach thing. And I totally didn't get it. I mean, I was out there, and these guys were in the sun and outdoors, and it was a competition within itself.
Yeah.
You know, who's walking like that and doing that? And I was so not cool with that whole thing. My attitude was keep covered, keep low key.
That's the way it was.
Yeah, I didn't need to do that. Every so often you pull your pants down and do a leg shot in the gym and you pull them up really quick. And you like to use shadows to your advice and say, oh, that mirror is the best mirror to use.
Right.
You know the best mirrors in the gym. There are some mirrors you didn't even want to go near.
Absolutely. John, I know you can relate to that. I could totally relate to that. And my first time out to California was the same kind of deal. It was just like, New York, when you train in New York, there's no giggling, there's no smiling, there's no laughing. Especially you train with somebody like Steve Mihalik or Tony Pandolfo, who's, you know, Masters, you know, Mr. America. Later on, I mean, the guy was one of the greats. But there was no – Tony would laugh once in a while, but never while he was training. You know what I mean? It was deadly serious in New York. And if you train at R&J or Mid-City Gym in Manhattan or in Brooklyn, you just – this was serious business. When I got to California, it was just like – these guys are like training in tank top. We used to wear it like covered up, man. Remember?
Yeah.
It was like, yeah, it might have been cut. It might have been torn. But we were covered up. We always had pants on, sweatpants on, sweatshirts on. And every now and like you said, Joey, every now and again, we would lift it up and feel a little bit of ab or someone would talk us into. And we reluctantly would pull a sweatshirt off, throw a couple of shots. Only only if you were like a few weeks out for competition.
Right.
You would never do that off season.
Tommy, if you saw a guy walk in who just joined and he was anything but that, and he was showing his legs and he came in with a tank top and he was doing that walk, you knew that guy wasn't a serious guy.
That's right. He's never going to make it.
You always.
So these guys, California, man, they were laughing. They were having fun. It was just like, I was like taken aback by it. And yet the dichotomy of that was, is they look freaking awesome. How do these guys look awesome? Yeah. You know, I remember seeing Mike Christian and I was training with Gary Stripe. And these guys are all like tank topped up and hanging out, laughing, giggling, and moving around. Rick Valente, I remember that guy used to be like Mr. Personality at Gold's Gym. And I'm like, how are they looking this good? And I got angry because I was like, these guys freaking don't know how to train. What the hell are they doing, man? You know, tossing around, clowning around. It was BS to me. You know?
You're right, and that's what happened when I went to the Venice thing. Somebody had said, oh, you got to go down there. I remember Joe Gold, I think was his name, the guy that did World's Gym, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. He opened World Gym later. Yep.
Yeah, so I walked in there one time. I didn't feel that thing, whatever it was, that synergy, we'll say. And then I went to Venice, and they were all out there on the beach working out and doing their thing. And I totally didn't get it. And I went back to Goals, that day and trained.
Yeah.
And I just stayed there during that month. And that's the show came up, and thank God, knock wood, I won. And then back to New York, and I was kind of pleased to go back home.
Yeah.
Because my mindset, I grew, that was my grassroots, was Long Island, Massapequa, Farmingdale, where the gym was. And you guys, even the history of not knowing you as like I do even now, you hear about it, there's a comfort there.
Yeah.
I wasn't a guy who was good because they wanted me to live. After I won the show, Joe Weida had contacted me and I worked for him for a while. He sent me, do you remember Herman Sporting Goods?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
He put me on a tour of Herman Sporting Goods because I was the champion, and he said it was $50 or $75 a gig, and they flew me out in a hotel, and I went to these gyms. And I would hang his protein. Well, hey, my name is Joey Fogel. I use this, and I would do a pose and expedition for like 20 minutes.
That's awesome.
And I worked for Herman. Yeah, Herman. They sent me to Detroit and all these places. Huh. And they wanted me to move to California. And I just didn't feel it was for me. If I did, I probably would have gone a little further in the sport, but I started losing interest after I won the show. I did what I really wanted to do. I lost the year before. I came in and I won. And I was a New York guy, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Strangely enough, I'm living in L.A. now, but for other reasons. But, you know.
Absolutely. It's a whole different vibe there. Can I, John, let me share a quick story, too, about that kind of thing, because it is interesting. And if we go back to this idea, this concept that we were filling a gap, we were filling a need with bodybuilding in some way, shape, or form that helped redeem some of these low self-esteem. And again, I don't want anybody to get the idea watching this is like, oh, all bodybuilders have low self-esteem. That's why they're doing it. But you know what? To a great degree, we all have that. We all have doubts, fears, uncertainties about ourselves. Our little inner voice is constantly saying we're not really good enough. So if you can find something that helps you redeem that and say, hey, you know what? I am good enough. And if I'm not good enough, I'm goddamn going to work hard enough till I become good enough. So that's bodybuilding. So I want to take that aside. You know, that experience in New York, in California, same thing. I was out there for 6 months and it just didn't fit the New Yorker in me. It just didn't fit. It didn't have the right feel in many respects, you know? And so you got to find your right home. But the reason I brought that up is because you mentioned after winning the Teenage USA, which, by the way, you look at some of the pictures of Joey Fokker after winning that Teenage USA, you look like you could have won the Open USA. I mean, I don't know how you got so good so fast. Well, I do know. You were training at Mahalik's gym. You were training at Mahalik. That's all it took. If you didn't die, you got freaking good fast. You know what I mean? And you did. Those pictures of you from the USA are just like, wow, holy crap. I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, I hope I don't have to compete against this guy. Like, man, I got enough competition.
Wait,
you know?
Just keep with your story because I have to tell you something about you that I remember saying, and I remember where I was when I said it. But yeah, just continue. I want to tell you.
You
something.
Got it. You got it. Where was it? Oh, after winning, for me, the biggest teenage show, and I won the Teenage Metropolitan, the Suburban, and all these shows coming up on the East Coast. And then Doc Neely, who's still a promoter today and a judge today, flew me down to Louisiana And I competed in the Teenage Southern USA and pretty much cleaned up. Got all the body. Remember all the body parts? I mean, you came up with like 9,000 trophies. I had trophies for body parts I don't even have. I'm like, the 11th toe body part? I don't have an 11th toe. What the hell? but you came home with all these trophies. I cleaned up at this thing, right? And it was interesting because what was going on in my mind at that time, and I'll try and make this as quick as possible, is I was starting to become a champion. Winning this, winning this, winning this. Starting to see pictures in the magazines. You know, there's a couple of little clips here and there. Never in magazine covers, but a few clips. And in my mind, I was like, I'm starting to become a champion. I'm changing. I'm melding. Yet, there was this unconscious part of me that was like, that's not who you are. You're not a champion. Remember, you're that loser. You're the guy who got left back. You're the guy in the special ed class. So unconsciously, I was motivated to take some time off after winning that Southern USA. And I thought it was going to be a couple of months. That couple of months turned into 5 years. My first Harley Davidson, and then riding with a shitload of outlaws, moving in the wrong direction. And it was almost, I look back at it and I identify, and this is something for everyone to kind of be aware of, that once we achieve something we perceive as great, if it's not completely congruent with our values and who we think we are, we tend to sabotage it then. And I completely sabotaged it. Over the next 5 years, it was like no bodybuilding, drugs, alcohol, Harley Davidson, outlaws, all this other illegal crap going on. But ultimately, it was bodybuilding that brought me back and saved me after a while. But it is interesting that you didn't go further.
What years were that when you were riding a bike? What year? What years were that?
Let's see. I think I won the Teenage Southern USA in 79, something like that, maybe 80. And then for the next 5 years, I mean, it wasn't until 83, 84 that I got back into bodybuilding and started winning some open shows and complete. It was interesting because I had to really create a different mindset. That's when I started getting into the personal development, personal growth, reading books like Psycho Cybernetics, Tony Robbins, getting into the whole mindset training stuff to change that perception of myself. In congruence with that was the actual bodybuilding stuff. And man, once all that mental stuff, along with the physical stuff, took hold, it was like there was no stopping. It was like, bam, it was like a freight train at that point, you know? I loved it, man. But yeah, same thing. Stopped after winning that Southern USA, man.
Yeah, you know? Because I won in 79 and in 80. I went in, it was at the end of 79, I went into the Teenage America, which was 2 weeks later, and I did lousy, and I knew I wasn't going to compete because I wasn't ready, I didn't want it, I didn't care, and the word is, you got to care.
Yeah.
I didn't care. Everyone at the gym, everyone, you got to go, you can win, no one's ever won 2 Teenage Nationals, you know, all this, the high
profile
crap, and I didn't want to go, and now, I competed at 203. When I won the Teenage USA. And I cut down from 248. I remember seeing photos of Rory Liedelmeyer. And I said, I want to get, and I remember seeing his weight. And I got up to 248, I cut down. I was 203. That show came, and I weighed 187. Holy I was shit. Flat. I had no muscle. I didn't want to be there. It was in Detroit, if I'm not mistaken. It was a shit show.
Wow.
And I came in fourth in my class. And then right after that, I was done. Yeah. I didn't want to do it. I barely made it through 79 because I lost in 78. I didn't. I had to move on. And the music kept calling me and calling me. And the only reason why, to reinforce what you just said, that gave me the confidence to get on stage and start my own band and book my own tours and was the bodybuilding. Because I said, well, geez, if I can do that and be successful, this music thing, I can do anything. And you got to keep reinventing yourself so you don't go back to first grade getting left back and the thing and the problems and the deterioration of who you think you are, you know, that whole thing.
Yeah.
So you're right. Everything you said is spot on. It's so true. And it takes time to work on yourself. You
got to
keep at it, right?
No question about it. It's a constant work in progress. Even today at 60 plus, it's like, and by the way, that's 60 plus. I'm not saying how much plus. it's enough to admit that it's 60 already.
So in 78 and 79, didn't you have any competition under your belt?
78, 79 was like those were big years.
Right.
The Metropolitan Championship, the Teenage East Coast, the Teenage Southern USA, a bunch of the Apollo, the Suburban America, won all those shows as a teenager. And then
that's what I heard about you, because I won the Metropolitan in 79. Mm. And John Girolamo won the Open. So he was the Open champion. I think it was 78. No, he was the Open champion. And then I was the teenage champion. I think it was 78. So that was our thing. But I kept hearing about you. Real quick, what I was saying earlier was I was standing in the foyer of Mahalik's gym, and your name kept coming up. And I remember saying to somebody, please tell me he's not a teenager. Because somebody had showed me a photo. And I was like, what class is he in? Because you remember they used to have the height classes in the
area. Yeah, high classes. AAU. It was still AAU at the time.
Yeah, up to 79 or 80. And I remember asking those questions. I was like, oh, you know, now I got to do this guy. So like, because you were like a legend within our whole area. Everybody, look, you talked about Defendus, talked about you. Then other guys who just started creeping in, like Andy Lopadotti and Ryman, all these guys. And I was going to be 19, which would have took me right now out, because you were a year or two older than me.
Right.
So, and I said, how old are you? Oh, goody, good, he's 20.
Believe me, you weren't the only one having those thoughts and those internal conversations. We all did, right, John?
I'm like, I'm safe now. Okay, because I don't have to worry about him. Who else have we got?
Man.
I wanted to ask you guys, when you both went into the gym at a young age, and we know how the gyms in the 1970s were really hardcore, very intimidating, like you said. What was that like when you first went in? Like, how long did it take for you to get into the groove of the gym where people started to accept you? Because you go into the gym at a young age, you're young teenagers, and you're going to these hardcore gyms, and it's not as accommodating as it is today, where everybody's welcome in now. But back then, it was a hardcore atmosphere.
You literally, and Joey, I bet you have kind of a similar experience, maybe not exactly, but you literally had to earn your stripes. You had to, you know what I mean? And part of it was that they would see, number one, you're consistent. You're not here infrequently. You're there either every day or every other day, and you're hitting it hard every time. You're giving 100%. Number two, you better not get in anybody's way. You got to learn very quickly. If Mahalik wants on that squat rack, you just freaking, you don't wait for him to say, hey, you're out of the way. You kind of like have to anticipate where you need to be at any given moment. So that was part of, you know, earning your stripes a little bit. For me, my personal experience was, I'll never forget that, literally the first workout at Future Man Gym. I had read somewhere that Arnold Schwarzenegger used to eat like a dozen hot dogs. I'm probably exaggerating, maybe it was six, but it was like a dozen hot dogs after he worked out, right? And he would go out to the boardwalk and he'd get a dozen hot dogs. So I knew better, of course. You know, I'm 15, 16 years old. I'm just getting started. I got to know better than Arnold. And so I ate like six hot dogs before the workout. And went in, proceeded, and I had no clue that how easily you could overdo it and completely shock your nervous system until it revolts against you. And so my first day at Future Man, threw up all over the guy's floor. You know what I mean? It's just like, and I'll never forget, it was Tony Pandolfo. And for those of you who don't know Tony was a great champion, maybe only 5'5", every bit as wide as he was tall, and just an amazing human being. One of those guys where, and Joe, you may recall this from Tony, but unless he was working out, he was never dressed in sweats or workout gear. He always dressed impeccably. He looked like he was going to a nightclub, even when he was sweeping and mopping and doing his thing around the gym. He had these satin shirts on, those 70s satin shirts with the big lapels.
Really?
You know, the lycra, the pants, the bell bottoms and the high heels. I mean, he was just like, he was sharp. You know what I mean? And how he looked with that physique coming through those clothes, it was just like, God, I don't want to look like that, man. I mean, literally, and listen, don't get me wrong, but I used to be like, look at that ass. He had like this solid, freaking muscular ass. I was like, I want an ass like that, man. So Tony Pandolfo, who I'd never had any conversation or talk with at all, comes up to me after I throw up and I'm like hanging out there. And he just comes up and I'm thinking, I'm dead. I'm done. This is going to kill me. They're going to eat me up and spit me out and throw me out in the street, right? He comes up, he hands me the mop and the bucket and says, clean it up, and walks away like it's an everyday occurrence.
Yeah.
It's almost like I earned my stripe by working out hard enough to throw up on the guy's floor.
Right.
But it took, you know, between that and other things, it took a while to really gain acceptance and become part of the culture, you might say. That's part of the learning curve.
It took me the same thing about it. It took time to look. Got my Joe Nazario was at the gym. Steve Mihalik, Donnie Modjeleski, all these guys. These are big, hot.
These were guys. They were legends.
Huge. And they had the look and they had the attitude and they didn't have time for bullshit. And that's when, again, you keep yourself covered up. You put away your weights. You don't want to be a deterrent for anybody. And eventually, when they see you and they get a glimpse of what you look like, you become in with those guys.
Right.
And you're right. You earn your stripes and you got to just play along, man, because they don't have time. And look, you got guys dieting. And as we know, taking the juice, which we're going to have to get into sooner or later. And the spirit of who they are, man, one day they're great and they're wonderful. The next day they could be a real difficult person to deal with. And the psyche of it is changing. Like, what happened? The guy was so nice yesterday. Now he's an asshole. Like,
wow.
You learn.
Yeah.
How to navigate through that day and how to get through your workout. And there were times when I would just say, I want to get in before they come in or after they come in, just get out and do my workout. And then you realize, nah, I'm going to be here, man. They got to see what I'm about. Because that's the competitive nature also, just to be in.
You hit it on the nose. The schizophrenic, almost schizophrenic multi-personalities that were a result of the dieting and the steroids and all these other things. I remember even Tony, as sweet, the guy was so encouraging, such a great guy. And I remember one time, and I don't even know why, but he's just like, erupted on me. He's like, I can't carry you anymore, Tony. And I'm like, where does this come from?
Right.
You know, I didn't want to even go back, but you got to go back. That's one of the ways you earn your stripes. You just deal with it. And then it's like it never happened. They don't talk about it. They don't mention it. They don't apologize. It's just like, hey, that's part of the deal, man. You know?
They had moments when they would freak out. And then look, and I had moments when I was that guy years later from taking too much or too whatever the hell was going on. Who knew? Somebody, it's really funny. Somebody recently said to me, they were asking me about steroids and a sex drive. And they said, back in the day, how I said, you know, it's really funny you said that because I remember either really having an overly crazy sex drive in my, like, and then the next day, nothing.
Right.
It was so ambiguous within itself because you'd have this feeling of, man, I'd sleep with anything. I'd sleep with a fucking couch if I had. And then the next day, nothing. I'm like, get out of my way. I'm training. Yeah. It was so, because that level. Testosterone and estrogen and whatever's going on up and down. And look, we didn't know like we know today levels and what to use. What we were just taking anything. I remember, I don't know if it was the same for you, but I remember when we first got into it, I remember somebody saying to me, oh my God, Joey, your arms look great. What are you taking? And I'd be like, what am I taking? I'm fucking doing 72 sets of arm curls. What do you mean, what am I taking? You know, and it's like, don't you think that has something to do with it?
Right. Yeah. Yes.
And then the conversation goes on and you kind of, you feel comfortable with somebody and you're like, well, I'm taking that. I'm not taking that. And then you kind of level it off and they kind of get the spirit of what you're talking about, you know?
Well, it's interesting. John has certainly a different experience in that respect. Right. And he's got the advantage of never having had to have that experience, you know, in many ways as a bodybuilder, as a natural competitor, which by the way, I got to give you all the kudos in the world for having accomplished. Oh my God.
Kudos.
It's just unbelievable what you've been able to accomplish without the support, you know, and that's not to take anything away from competitors like you, Joey, or myself, or anyone else who's competed at that highest level. But I do remember, and even as a teenager, actually, Joey, I never, like, it was like the furthest thing. And part of it, and you know, part of that division between Mr. America's Steve Mihalik's gym and Tony Pandolfo's Future Man gym was that I remember distinctly walking with the one time, because I didn't know where I was going to train for sure. I love Future Man. It's where I got started as a teenager, but it was like, Steve Mihalik, this is the guy I first saw when I walked in there. And this is the guy I wanted to be like, you know what I mean? So when I went over to Mihalik's gym, when I went over to Steve's, one of the things I remember distinctly, and it stuck out in my head because it was like I was completely natural at that point, was signing in. You know, you had to sign in at the front desk. And it was a ballpoint pen with a hypodermic. It was a hypodermic needle. I'm like, well, this is a stark contrast from what I'm used to.
Like, he had a sign that said up the dosage. I didn't know what that meant. And you had the hypodermic needle. Because in Mahalik's gym, there's a guy named Bob Godner.
Bob, I remember, sure.
It was huge.
Yep.
And they had that hypodermic pen. My mother signed me up. She's like, what's that? I had no idea. I'm like, oh, I'm sure. It's, what am I going to say?
Oh, mom would just be mortified, you know?
God.
But then it was like the other side of it, which was, you know, so I had actually had that discussion with Tony Pandolfo. And he's like, listen, kid, he goes, you know, he goes, tap in your potential now. Train, get as big as possible. Let's eat. Let's master the diet, nutrition. And let's really just train. You can worry about that stuff later if you need to. You know what I mean? I'm like, okay, I was fine with that. So I was very fortunate. And maybe part of it was genetics, good guidance, good coaching. But all those teenage shows, I was completely clean. It was just like, bam. And it wasn't until later when I wanted to get really serious. I knew competing at the national championship and the Mr. Olympia competition. It's like, hey, if I'm going to have an even playing field, this is what's got to happen. And it took a couple of years even after that to make that decision. But again, I was around all those guys that were using and growing and even training, you know, with my dear friend, John Defendez. After I won the Teenage Metropolitan and John took second, and I look at pictures and I still wonder how I beat the guy. I mean, I think it was the stroke of luck. But we started training together in his basement. He had a freaking incredible gym in his basement. And we could crank up the music loud. I remember his mom used to bang on the basement door, turn that bigger music down. You know, we would be nuts, going nuts, playing the Allman Brothers or whatever great music there was at the time.
Right.
And I remember, I mean, after training, it was just like, John was like taking these. I'm like, what are you taking? What is all this stuff? He said, this pill. I'm like, what is it? And I'm like, completely clueless. But I do remember John getting bigger and freaking stronger, like every workout. I was like, holy shit, I can't. So I stopped training with him. I said, I can't compete with this. He's going to kill me, you know? He was doing the holic stuff. We were going nuts. I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it, you know?
I have so much love for this guy. He taught me so much. And more than anything, just to have the tenacity and the fortitude to keep going, because he would set a level like Mahalik. And
yeah.
He was only older, I think, by 2 years, whatever it may have been.
Right. I think about the same age as me, about 2 years older than you.
Yeah, and he would go and we'd do the workout because we train together. Sometimes we're just Mahalik and I, sometimes John and me and Mahalik, the three of us, sometimes just John and I, whatever
right.
It was. But they needed somebody to – look, yo, at that level, you don't train alone because you want someone else to set up. Look, when we would do like all those supersetting, that craziness, you couldn't even have anybody else in the gym because if somebody else went over and picked up a set of 30
– oh.
Oh my God! It was like, get on the Hyman machine, but Mahalik would have a shit. So the whole gym was on lockdown until the
right.
Mahalik would start, and then it was John, and then it was me. And you better keep up because Mahalik was right behind me. Right. So you had to wait not only for John to be done, but for me because we had a. And if I wasn't, I was the last guy in that circle.
Oh, that's brutal.
Oh, brutal.
Hey, let's talk about that because John, you probably have a similar experience. Because this is one of the things I think that separates in many respects today's physique world and competitors with the ones from old school, which right. was old school. We always, and you could always find a training partner. There was always someone in Future Man Gym. If I was, there was a guy like Wayne Alonzo, a bunch of other guys, this guy Bob, I don't remember his last name. There was always somebody training at the same time, at the same level of intensity in the gym. And you paired up, man. There it goes. It was like a set of squats. The whole building comes down. It was you always had a partner. And if you didn't have a partner, you had two partners. You always had someone who would push you. You'd push them. They didn't always last. You didn't always last. Whatever it might be. But there was always that either the camaraderie and the push and the drive, you know, that I think lacks a little bit today. I don't see people having that sort of a pairing up and partnership training as we used to do, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I always had a partner when I trained as a teenager, and it's just, yeah, you're right now. It seems like people don't need partners now. They got their headphones, they got their
right.
cell phones, and they don't really need the partners. But yeah, I always had a partner. It was like,
yeah.
you know.
Same here, always. You know, I had some legends. In fact, one of my best, Ronnie Starantino, who's a great guy today, was the best of friends, was one of the toughest training partners. He used to call me. There was a few that I really remember distinctly. Ronnie was one of them. I remember we would train legs to the point where I couldn't. I would like have to nap on the floor after the last set of squats and just lay there for 20 minutes to try and recover, you know? And he would, by the time I'd get home, he would have left a voicemail message, a 20-minute voicemail message. It's like, he'd start with, what do you think of the leg workout today? Pretty good today, right? Not bad, not bad. Yeah, good. Yeah, the squats, yeah, the 300 pounds, that was good, that was good. I think you could have went 225. I think you could have went 325. You could have been heavy. And it would just escalate. It was like this escalation until he was screaming. You can tell the judges at the next contest when you were tired. You didn't feel good that day. You didn't want to train like that day. And screaming into the phone. And then he finished with like, okay, I'll see you tomorrow. It was like that's the training partners I had, man. They were all lunatics like that, you know? I had one guy, Gary, who had ears like this, and he just all he would say is more, more, more. He was literally a sociopath. I used to ride with some of the most hardcore, crazy ass bikers you could ever imagine, outlaws. And he was the only true sociopath that I've ever really met. He hated me. Hated human beings, and he wanted to kill me. He wanted to kill me. But you know what? Those guys are the ones that helped make me a champion, man. Yeah. Without question, I think it's missing today.
Yeah. Yeah, I trained with a guy. The first gym I went to was like, it was behind a guy's garage, and these four guys had built it. It wasn't like a regular commercial gym. So when you joined, I think it was $10 a month, and you got a key.
It was actually joined. It was behind a guy's garage.
Yeah.
I love it. That's entrepreneurship.
You could walk into the guy's driveway and just go in behind the garage, and they had their own building, and you could go whenever you want. You could go at midnight if you wanted to. So there were four owners, and three of them weren't serious, but one guy was serious about training, and he was about 4 years older than me, and I was 16, and I think he took me on. He's like, all right, I'm going to teach this 16-year-old kid, and his guy was certifiably nuts. Like, he would try to destroy me every workout.
Yeah.
When we did legs, we would do the vertical leg press supersetted with squats, and we would just keep going back and forth, you know, and adding weight each set. And like, the vertical leg press, you had to put your knees were in your armpits when you started because they didn't have a catch on it. And he
would use
your hands to get it going. You know, he goes, fuse your hands, you're a pussy. And he's just screaming at me the whole – luckily, we were the only two in the gym because they would have thought he was nuts, which he was. But he just tried to destroy me. But it really taught me how to train hard. But, man, you never see that stuff anymore.
You know, it does. It teaches you that you can go to a level that you couldn't. Yeah. Now, granted, there's a risk, obviously, right? I mean, a lot of guys didn't make it.
Right.
But it did teach you that there's a level that you wouldn't even remotely go to.
No.
And that you didn't think you could go to that you actually were capable of doing, you know?
And I there was a time I had those training, those guys, over-the-top training partners, like Mihalik. And John was, that was a whole different professional level.
Oh, that's a totally another, that's another level. Yeah.
And when I would go in with other guys who would be screaming and yelling, I'd be like, man, you don't have to scream and yell. I remember sometimes being in the zone so much where I was concentrating on the blood and the muscle in the area and isolation that if something took me out of it, I'd get startled almost.
Right.
I was such in the zone. Like, I gave myself a number like 12 reps, 15 reps, whatever it might be. I was really concentrating on the movement. And that wasn't the time for, come on, three more. I think it was more looking at it from a body sculpturing type of scenario than how much can you get out. Because not all of it is how many can you do. If that was the case, everybody would eat nothing but chicken and water and fish and a piece of fruit every day and take steroids and just do as much, and then you turn into champions, right?
Right.
It doesn't work that way. You know, you get a situation in hand, and I'm grabbing that bar. Like, the biggest mistake I see people make, and I'm not in it like you guys any longer, but they grab the bar too tight, and they want to grab it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, your hands are levers. Loosen up those hands and push.
Yeah.
Feel that. What are you grabbing that and cutting off all that flow? The weight's not going to go anywhere. You holding it ain't going to make it go anywhere. Concentrate on what we're working on. I'd rather see you put 80 pounds on that bench and get quality reps out. There'll be a time to grow into that massive 300-pound push and you're kicking ass on it every so often. But get into the spirit of the muscle, man. Don't feel it. Because if you don't feel it, something's not working.
Yeah, I agree. And I know John does too, because that's the only way you really become a champion is if you really start to develop that mind-muscle connection. And you can't do that with someone screaming at you.
Right.
You know, even this maniac guy who's like, more. And that was always it. We'd say, more. I was like, oh, my fucking damn deal. He's like, more, more, more. He didn't scream. He didn't yell, except for the one time. Oh, God. One time, I remember I was training on a Saturday. I was living in Manhattan at the time. And I'm training on a Saturday. and I'm a young guy and I'm in good shape. And, you know, it's I'm single. I'm living in Manhattan and I'm going out like on the weekends here and there, you know, completely defeating my purpose of bodybuilding, partying. And we had like a 7 a.m. workout on Saturday morning, legs. And I went out the night before. And so we're into it about three quarters in, probably about 45 minutes, almost an hour into the leg workout. And we're in our squat, doing squats. And that's it. My body just said, that's enough. So I literally, I racked it up like 400 pounds. And I racked it up, ran into the bathroom, closed the stall, and just was throwing up my guts. I just couldn't take it anymore, right? And he is banging. Like it would sound like a tank. Coming through the freaking stall, boom, 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 yelling is going to get the F out here, finish that set, get the, and just screaming at me, man. And I was like, I literally made the decision, I'm not training with this guy anymore. The next day I was in there training with him. It didn't really matter because I realized that, hey, you know what? He's right. I needed to learn that lesson. But the best training partners were the ones like Ronnie, who just, he knew, a whisper, getting in my face, sinking down, allowing me to get, like you said, into that zone that we call it today, where you're connected with that muscle. You're connected with every muscle fiber, the blood flow. You can feel the pulsation. That's what makes the difference. You're absolutely right.
There was half-assed. There was a time where I couldn't even listen to music. Like, you know, we turned the music on when we were training. Like a regular Friday night with the guys, we'd be training, whatever. Maybe I do legs, one body part. I had trained that morning. And I said, I couldn't even have music. I was just so into listening to where I was in my body. Yeah. And I found a connection for it. It was a short time, but I remember it was really working well. And that's when I think I was putting on a lot of serious muscle. I found a way to put on some big muscle fast with the diet and taking the juice and putting out. And I didn't necessarily, it was heavy for me. Not that I needed a spotter, but I remember deeming it as, I still want to be lean. I don't want to be massively big where I'm losing track of, because I think it's a different mindset. That was right when I won the show, and that was in California. It was only a month. I trained all the way up to that point, but you never heard people screaming in these gyms, these world-class gyms.
You didn't. And in fact,
defendants, they would offer something, but they weren't yelling at you.
Right.
They would use certain verbiage that maybe today you wouldn't even use, but they would say it. Come on, you pencil neck motherfucker. You're gonna go, whatever. That was it. But you didn't.
Absolutely.
You didn't have to have any screaming at you.
All right, thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks to Tom Terwilliger and Joey Folco for joining us for this interview. And we will have part two of our interview with Tom and Joey next week on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thank you to Florida Alternative Medicine for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. Thanks to all of you who helped contribute to the show via Patreon. And if you're interested in contributing to the show, you can just go to our bodybuildinglegendsshow.com website, which is our official website. And in the upper right-hand corner, you will see the link to be a Patreon donor. And you can contribute as little as $5 a month if you want. So I appreciate you guys considering that. All right, that is it for the show. Be sure to vote on Tuesday. Big election out here in the United States. Stay safe. Keep training hard, everybody. And we'll see you guys next week on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Take care.